OTB Sports Golf Weekly with Now TV.
Stream the Masters live on Now TV.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
7 months later is damn sure a lot better than not at all. 2020 Masters is here. It is the second week of November, rather strangely. Bryson DeChambeau is the favorite. Tiger Woods is the defending champion. We have 26 first-timers this year, and there are lots of contenders in between. The crew has assembled on a Tuesday, Nathan Murphy.
I am ready, Joe. I am pumped for this.
Fionn Davenport also pumped, I take it?
Very.
I don't know if I actually am that pumped as I would be if it was in April. Again, yeah. I sort of feel like my sporting year has a certain rhythm that I should adhere to. And now it still feels a little bit weird being cold, and you're sort of, the Masters starts your, I won't say it starts your love of golf, but you're sort of planning out the summer and where you might play and what you might do, whereas now you're kind of going, we can't even get out. But listen, I'm still Thursday going to be very happy it's here.
Peter, well, Larry,
Hello, Joe. I'm delighted that the Masters is here. So, don't know about the other two, but...
And you sound us.
I was watching the Sky Sports preview of the Masters this morning, and they told me that it's better. It's better now than it is in April.
Did they give a reason?
No. It's just, you know, it's the usual build-up.
Hype.
You know?
Hype.
The usual hype. It's amazing.
All I'm wondering, Joe, is where I can watch this on Sky Sports over the weekend.
I've no idea. Now TV, though, they know exactly where you can watch this. The Now TV pass is waiting for you. You can watch the Masters if it's not something that you usually do on Sky Sports or various channels. Now TV will let you get hold of the Masters in all its glory. So Now TV, sport on your terms. We have a competition winner as well, briefly, Nathan, from last week.
We do. Let me get a quick... Frank Woods, I'm going to DM you. I've just got your prize in the last hour or so. So, Frank Woods, I will get in touch with you. Congratulations. You get free Now TV, so you're going to be able to sit back, relax, watch it. Glorious. Is it in Ultra HD this time, I wonder? I like the old Ultra HD. Makes me feel rich. I know there's no actual difference at all, I find, when I'm watching a Premier League match on Ultra HD. But if I press the red button, it happens, and I go, well, clearly, somebody has invested a lot of time and money in giving me this. If it's there for the Masters, you'll see the little dimples on the ball. It's, you know, that's why we work hard in life.
The plan today is that Paul McGinley is going to join us maybe in about 20 minutes time or so. And we're also going to use a good portion of that on FM this evening. So that's kind of how we're doing things. We're getting two hits out of Paul McGinley. So it'll be good to have him with us. Bryson DeChambeau is your favorite. John Rahm is there then at 9-1. Dustin Johnson, after his second place finish in Houston, is 9-1. Justin Thomas 11s, Rory McIlroy 11s. Then we're into Xander 14s. And I'll park it at Brooks Koepka, who was tied fifth in Houston. So we're locked and loaded. After all the to-ing and fro-ing, Peter, people have looked at Bryson and said, yeah, he's the guy to beat.
Look, I don't know. He's such a short price to go into a tournament with such strong players in it. And on a golf course that... it's going to have no calories. It's going to play a whole lot different than what it does in April. And he doesn't have major success around this golf course. I know it's his old game was what we're comparing it against to his new game. He doesn't have the 48-inch driver, which we were all talking about. But he's seemingly, and going on what reports coming from the golf course is, he's hitting ridiculous short irons into, I think the longest club he hit into any hole was the 7-iron. So normally long driving doesn't win you the Masters. Normally proximity to the hole wins you the Masters for your second shots. But we'll wait and see. He's, for me, he's if you want to have a gamble, he wouldn't be the person I'd be putting my money on. He's too short of a price.
Yeah, like that's Bryson 1.0. We've very much moved on to Bryson 2.0 at this stage, and he can kind of do anything. Like the conversation, it's incredible listening to some of the interviews around. It's not about him winning. It's about what could happen if he wins and how it may change the face of golf forever. Adam Scott is talking about, not about distance control. He's talking about that suddenly his putting technique will be illegal. Adam Scott obviously just thrown out there, well, you know, I use studio anchoring and I would say that this is worse. And that if somehow Bryson turns up and wins, that there'll be an issue with that. His press conference, I think, is on around about now. It seems to be saying I can hit this as far as I want, pretty much whenever I want. So reading some of the other interviews around the course setup, which I'm sure we'll get into in more detail, the grass is either a little bit longer or it's just holding the ball a bit more on the edges of the greens. So I don't know, does that negate the importance of chipping around the greens and pitching? And I can't decide whether I really want Bryson to win just to see everybody throwing their toys out of the pram about what happens, or whether actually it would be really dull and uninteresting. I guess it depends how much he wins by.
I'd love to see him win, because I think then and only then will they do something about the golf ball and how far it's going.
Do you see the stats this year? So he's averaging 344 yards off the tee, 22 more than last year and 20 more than the year before. In the last 12 months, he's the only tour player who averages over one stroke gain per round off the tee. He's at 1.3 right now, the only one. And Kyle Porter, I think it was on CBS Sports, did a breakdown of if he was to hit full distances on his tee shots over the course of the 18 holes, that the longest club he'd have into any hole is a 5-iron, and he would hit that on 4 and 8. On every other hole, the longest club he would have is an 8-iron. And like he broke it down here, and he's going to go, he can sail bunkers that even the longest hitters have traditionally steered short of. He could go over the bunker on the left on 18. He has that in him. He has that yardage if he wants it. But like, so Porter did a whole list, like where he's basically hitting 58 degree wedges into something like 8 holes for his second shot. And given that, as Justin Ray pointed out, that strokes gained approach is the key stat for to determine the winner here, is if you were to look at anyone, it just hands him like an undue advantage. I mean, it is worth pointing out is winning two majors in a row is not easy. It's unlikely, you know, I mean, it's unlikely anybody wins any event, but as Porter said, it's not whether he wins. It's more how he goes about trying to win. That's the really interesting storyline this week.
Yeah. And there's no doubt a couple of holes, like the first, I really want to watch him tee off and see, does he carry the grid, carry the bunker on the first, you know, or then there's holes like the ninth, where if you get past the traditional pinch point, it just opens up and it's the easiest hole in the world.
That's what Spieth was saying. Yeah, that's what Spieth was saying. He opens himself where he has like, you know, 80 yard fairways available to him.
Yeah.
Like say on the first, you know, if he does go past the bunker, he'll be hitting a 58 degree, like a gap wedge in for a second. You know, it's like.
But so
there is a stat. Go on. There is a stat out there, sorry, Joe, saying that the last three Masters winners after a US selection were non-American.
Oh. You think there's a correlation?
I mean, that is science.
There's a lot of terrible stats out there. I think you've just taken top prize. Well done. Yeah. Completely irrelevant, Peter. Nice.
And the election hasn't even been called yet. So
yeah,
you
Peter,
know.
The election's not
Come
over.
On. Election's not over.
So you'd like, yeah, I just didn't. Yeah. America. What again?
McIlroy was saying there are mud balls and that this place is playing very long. Like, I can't shake the fact as well that DeChambeau was sixth longest at the US Open. You know, I just wonder to what extent a lot of this is hype and we'll be watching it. Now, I hope I'm wrong. I think I do want to see him win. I think I do want him to see him take the course to its knees. I want the chaos. I want the rancor. I want everyone banging their fists and saying golf is destroyed. I just want all of that stuff coming out of this. But he was only sixth longest at the US Open and did win every bit as much because of his short game and because of his putting. So I'm just really looking forward to seeing where he ends up. I'm not as convinced by all these diagrams because, like, a lot of them are saying, well, he's going to hit the ball 380 yards, 90 yards, 400 yards with rollout. I don't think there's going to be that level of rollout. So what's going to be his carry is the question.
Yeah, and I think, again, the putting stats are interesting because, listen, everyone knows the extra distance he has. But his rise in the putting statistics has been far more dramatic over the last year than his rise in the driving distance statistics. Mm. And he's still going to have to pick and choose. He's not going to overpower every single hole. What he did brilliantly at the US Open was pick his moments, which is probably why he ends up as sixth in driving distance, because he knows when he needs to pull it out, he can pull it out. Mm. And interesting, in his press conference as well, he's saying, yeah, I can hit this as far as I want, as often as I want at this golf course, but Augusta National is always going to come down to pitching and putting. Maybe that does change because of the time of year where pitching isn't quite as important. Obviously, they can control the speed of the greens exactly how they want all week long. It seems as though it's going to be very wet, though. So does that even it out a little bit on the greens? Because as much as we're familiar with the different approach shots you want, we're also incredibly familiar. It's one of the great things as to where you want to hit it on the green and the difficulty of that putt that follows and how lightning quick they are, particularly by the time it comes to Thursday, Friday evening. They're like ice. Is that going to be the case if it's lashing rain now for the next 3-4 days? Ordinarily, that weather is Rory McIlroy territory if it evens it out on the greens. I know we'll get into it a little bit more, but it does feel, again, people like to, I don't want to say pick on Bryson because he brings a lot of it himself. Like, it is turning into some sort of a Bryson's performance here as a sort of referendum on the future of the sport. Mm. There could be big issues, and there are big issues in the sport. Bryson just might not play well this week. Doesn't mean he won't play well in a month's time and overpower every course over the next 6 months, but not Augusta. Does that mean that actually everything's fine because this one course that we hold in such esteem is bulletproof, that actually we don't need to worry about that? Like, so if he wins, golf needs to dramatically change. If he doesn't win, it's all just fine. It doesn't seem to make much sense.
It also doesn't really suggest, you know, you got to look at the way golf moves at a glacial pace. It's slow. If he wins this week, you know, the pressure on golf to do something about the ball might increase, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they'll all of a sudden do a big about right turn and suddenly introduce all these kind of radical changes that Jack Nicklaus has been calling for 25 years to absolutely no avail. So, yeah, I mean, I think Nathan makes a very good point. You know, it doesn't all hinge on whether Bryson's game is sharp this week or not.
Just a few bits of news before we get really stuck into preview chat, and Paul McGinley will join us as well. So Sergio Garcia is out. I suspect many of you have seen that at this stage. And the other piece of news, Fionn, is that Lee Elder, the first black man to play at the Masters back in 1975, will be a ceremonial starter next year. Not this year, but next year when they're back to ceremonial starts again. Obviously, Tom Watson was next man in, effectively, but they've gone with Elder. And I think, you know, the history at Augusta is far from perfect. And even the recent history is far from perfect. But I did see that and I thought that is a really good move. And you have to give credit when it is due.
Well, it's a very PR-friendly move. But you're absolutely right. Lee Elder, who was the first black man to play, played in 1975. You know, in the middle of getting death threats, might I add, at the time, for daring to accept an invitation extended to him. So he's 86 years old and, you know, as he said, it gives me great pride to know that my first Masters continues to make a positive impact on others. And that's absolutely true. I mean, how far Augusta has come, maybe not nearly far enough, say somebody, including me, but it's still come a long way. So as is, you know, Augusta's all about its tradition, and as is tradition on this podcast, I do my little delve into Augusta history the week before the Masters. So, you know, established in 1932, it's interesting is that, so for all of the, you know, the genteel, you know, spirit of the South, the true spirit of the South, the azaleas, Magnolia Drive, all of the, you know, the piano music that accompanies every single broadcast of the Masters, it was absolutely Cliff Roberts and Bobby Jones' intention that they build a course that would have all of that, that would exude this kind of genteel calm. But the early years, right up until the early 50s, it was a completely different case. Like, they had, like, it was had this real festival atmosphere. So they used to have these, like, in and around the Masters. So they used to have a thing called the Battle Royale, where like young local black men would be stripped and greased up, put into basically a wrestling pen, and they would just punch bare knuckle each other and just have like these fights for money, or not, you know, people would gamble on who would win. And James Brown, the godfather of soul, who is from Augusta, he was one of these young guys who performed in these battle royales. I mean, the course's history of, I mean, not even blatant racism. Like, I mean, blatant racism is a dark, dark stain on it, particularly as the course or Augusta has always been loath to tell its own history or to acknowledge its own history. Up until a few years ago, and maybe still today, members were discouraged from talking about the course's history under penalty of potential expulsion. So you had to be very careful about what you said about the course, about how things were once upon a time. So for instance, Cliff Roberts, who was the founder of Augusta and was its chairman until 1977, when he actually took his own life on the course. Like he said that, like he goes, he would say things like, I don't know, like he used to say, talking about integration. All right, he would go, well, it means mixed marriages. The mixed are the worst, the most worthless of all in every respect. And according to Charlie Sifford, who would have been the first black man to be eligible to play the Masters because he won a tournament in 1967, but no invite was extended to him, he said in his book that Roberts was quoted to him as saying, as long as I live, there will be nothing at the Masters besides black caddies and white players. Now, I do add that historians have said, that's not really sounds like something Cliff Roberts would have said, but they also quickly add, it's probably something he thought, but we're not really sure that he might have said it. But Charlie Sifford said it in his own book, and Charlie Sifford made no secret of how angry he was about the entire thing. Like, you know, the book is called Just Let Me Play, and, you know, he goes, look, as long as I live, or what did he say? It was something, well, he goes, those mofos, like, they just didn't let me play. I mean, until 1983, you couldn't have a caddy that wasn't black. You weren't allowed. You couldn't have a white caddy. And no player was black in 1983. So that image of black men carrying bags for white men was just the all-pervasive thing. However, and this is kind of an interesting, because history is kind of a funny, contradictory thing. With the exception of maybe IMG and Arnold Palmer, Augusta has done more to elevate the reputation of the professional golfer than any other institution in America. Because until Augusta, I mean, for all of the tradition and nonsense that it goes, oh, these ancient, you know, Magnolia or blah, 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 blah. Augusta was founded in 1932, which there was already 5,000 golf courses in America. It's not like, it wasn't the first, you know, it wasn't even close to being the first. But this is an interesting one. So so you have, for all of that prestige and dignity, it did have an effect, because until the establishment, or until Augusta and the Masters became a feature of television, the professional golfer, and Peter will probably recognize this, certainly if you've heard stories, the life of the professional golfer was not much better than the life of a professional wrestler. Like, you mean, you were disrespected, disregarded, you weren't paid very much, and you kind of shuttled from one crappy tournament to another, trying to eke out a win, trying to make a cut. It was terrible. But all of a sudden, once the Masters kind of came into to general view and was shown on television, and Magnolia Drive and the azaleas and the tinkly piano music, all of a sudden it helped elevate that golfer. And so it became kind of, these are kind of these elite sports people, sports men, really, because women, well, at Augusta, women didn't feature until the 90s. But So in a sense, for all of its troubled history, I am not surprised that professional golfers, especially those who are aware of their own history, would be very, very grateful for the establishment of Augusta, and particularly Augusta, that really pushed that kind of tradition and gentility and all the rest of it. Because, as they said, it did a huge number in promoting golfers as like some of the top sports people in America.
The comments are flying in. So to give you a sample of what people out there are saying, so I'm going from YouTube. Nathan, I know you've a few as well. Derek Ryan, hey guys, will the poor weather help Shane Lowry in his bid to win his first green jacket? His performance in Portrush last year will surely give him a massive boost. How does this course set up for Lowry, Peter?
I think it sets up pretty good, to be honest with you, but I don't think they're going to have thunderstorms, so I don't think they're going to be playing in the rain. The greens won't be affected by the water. They have the sub-air system, so the greens are going to be like pretty much as they would be normally. Hard, fast, tough to control your ball on it. Right. What the big thing is going to be is soft fairways and soft surrounds around the greens.
Houster says, Xander Tyrrell, the hoodie boy, are my picks. Alistair McGarrity is all aboard the Hideki train, choo-choo. Anto Hughes, I've backed Spieth just to see the rage in Peter's face.
the joy it will bring you. Yeah. We're doing. Can we just say right now?
Throwing your money away, my friend.
I don't know how the 4 days are going to go, but I can guarantee you we will have a special pod Sunday night if Jordan Spieth wins.
Oh,
all right, come on.
And it may be several hours long.
Yeah. There'll be tears.
We'll have Peter on mute for the whole thing.
Okay.
Bryson Pert is certainly putting pressure on himself to perform, says Derek Ryan, with recent comments about Augusta playing as a par 67 for him. Mark McDonough, this is a question we'll put to Peter and Paul McGinley later on. How likely is Bryson to struggle? Sorry, not Mark McDonough. Somebody else was wondering about the lack of the green reading books for Bryson. That is something I will ask Peter and Paul in just a moment. Boom, boom, boom. Bryson, not the only big hitter. The likes of Wolf, Champ, etc. Plus, they don't rely on a green book as much as Bryson, says Kevin McLaughlin. And more coming in. A few people picking Dustin. I mean, DJ, anyone willing to stick their neck out and say this is DJ's time? He's playing well. He's had a great year. He finished second.
He reversed into second, though.
Yeah, that was just a tune-up, though. That was just a post-COVID, how am I feeling? And the word is he's feeling okay again. So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, was he close to second last year as well?
Yeah, he was. Was he leading after the first day? He was certainly in the mix after the first couple of days. So, isn't he shown consistently over the years he can play and he can get it round Augusta? You still feel that year he fell down the stairs. That was maybe the year for him.
But sure, do we all think that stairs thing is bullshit?
I don't know. I just thought of it there. I was like, now that I think about it, considering everything else, it does sound a little bit.
It does. 1 second, Joe. There's the lawyers knocking at the door again.
If they don't knock at our door, we're just fine, Peter. Don't you worry.
I've just got the tap to say nothing.
Amount of them who listen, if Dustin Johnson wins, you'd be very happy for him. He deserves at least two majors, if not more. It's hard to make a case. He's one of those four or five who are in the top 10 in the betting that is there because he's always in the running. And because is he still the world number one? Could he manage to keep hold of that? World number ones obviously don't have a very good record at the moment. Yeah, I wouldn't be putting my money on him, but you wouldn't be shocked if he won it.
No, I wouldn't at all. I think I thought he played well last week. He's got a new putting technique with his brother. Did you see that? He's got this whole new way of reading putts. So like they're very much more deliberate, he and the brother Austin. And the idea is that rather than kind of feel the line, he commits to a line. And then no matter what, even if he's gotten the wrong line, but he is 100% committed, which apparently he wasn't beforehand.
Okay.
I think he could do well.
I mean, it would be no surprise. It's long overdue. No. He's going to win a second major at some stage.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of when. Let's bring in Paul McGinley, who joins us now. Paul, you're very welcome. Great to have you with us. I hope you can hear us okay there. Yeah, we're doing great. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Not too bad. All set. Looking forward to a great week.
Better late than never to have the Masters, that's for sure. We're all excited. We're looking forward to it. It's just a lovely thing to have for golf fans this week. Let's get the most boring question out of the way firstly. To what extent will the course play differently and how? And like, are we in, as we always do before majors, when we talk too much about how this course is a beast and that course is a beast, are we over-exaggerating just how different it's going to be?
It's only going to be different. The main reason it's going to be different, Joe, is going to be the weather forecast. Amazingly, watching a bit of the coverage last night, I watched about an hour on Sky. I don't know if you saw it last night. They were coming from the Golf Channel. Rob Lee was bringing it in, and the Golf Channel were interviewing a number of players. And I was amazed to hear so many of them talking in the present tense about how the golf course is firm and running and difficult and all of these things. And I'm saying, like, guys, have you not looked at the forecast here? Because there's going to be a radical change from what they've practiced in over the weekend and yesterday to what it's going to be like come Thursday morning, because there's torrential rain forecast the next 48 hours.
Okay, so are we saying it's akin to a Zach Johnson type year?
No, it's not. It's not, Joe, because it's going to be warm. It's still going to be up near the 80 degrees, but there's heavy rain coming in, and that's going to saturate the golf course. It's going to make it play really long. And what we know from the quality of players that we have at the top of the game now, when it's long, that doesn't mean it's going to play difficult. That's actually going to mean it's going to play quite, you know, scoring is going to be quite good. I'm expecting a low week of scoring here, because the temperatures are going to be warm. The players will still be, you know, hitting up miles down there. The fairways are going to be wider because they're going to be softer. And as much as the sub air is great, it's not going to outrun God. You know, when he keeps pouring that rain on, you're still going to have pretty, you know, in relative terms, soft green. So I'm expecting, you know, certainly something in the double figures being a winning score here. I'm expecting this to be a front-footed style of tournament, which is going to be great viewing on TV.
And to what extent then is this Bryson's or any of the Bombers to lose? Because what we do know, and I saw you making the point even in the Sunday Times at the weekend, is that this is an iron player's golf course. This is a second shot golf course. So to what extent does the ball not running out lessen that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, obviously all players are going to be better with a 9-iron in their hand than they are with a 7-iron and all the way through the bag. So big hitting is always important. It sets you up for the second shot. But the real key is going to be, can you take advantage with your second shot, hitting shorter irons in? Can you still hit it into the right sections of the green? Can you still use the sideboards that a lot of these pin positions have that you can feed the ball in? Why Bubba Watson has played so well around here is he moved the ball in off these what they call sideboards and slopes. Towards the flags, and that's what it is. I don't know if you saw the stat, you know, which I was referring to in my piece in the Sunday Times, and Justin Ray posted it yesterday. You know, in modern times, only for the last 5 years have Augusta National come to the party in terms of getting really accurate statistics, and you know, with the lasers and all that kind of thing, and strokes gained approach is the one highlight and correlation that stands out. And of the five leaders of that category. Since statistics really started in Augusta in the last 5 years, three times it's been the winner, also at the tournament, and the other two times it's been second and third. So there's a massive, massive correlation here to not just hitting straight iron shots, but distance control, as we saw from Tiger Woods last year, who led that category and went on to win, is absolutely vital around here. And if you get it out of position, it's so hard to get it up and down. And if you get it out of position and get it on the wrong side of the flag, it's very difficult at two-putt. And that's when you see guys struggling on the greens.
Paul, I saw Rory McIlroy was talking that because of the time of year that the Bermuda grass hasn't died off yet, so yeah. That chipping is going to be different in, yeah. Like, markedly so?
Not markedly, but it will be different. I mean, it's really unique here. You've got two different kinds of grasses. I don't know if you want me to go into the technical aspect of that, but it really is strange. You get the Bermuda grass, which is a summer grass, and that is absolutely shaved down, and then they put the rye on top, and the rye is a wonderful grass. I love playing on rye grass. It's easy. It's like a cushion. The ball sits up beautifully on it, but because the temperatures have been unseasonably warm in Georgia in the last month or so, that Bermuda is not really as dead as they would like it to be, and it's still kind of coming through the rye grass at this moment in time. What they need is a few cold days to... I'm sure Irish weather would certainly take care of that. But what they need is some cold days to burn off that Bermuda and put it into dormancy where it lies for the winter.
Would we ever see preferred lies at Augusta, Paul?
That's a good question, Pete. We've never seen it before. Really good question. But, you know, Augusta National are moving a bit with the times. I mean, can you believe that there's a college football game on here on Saturday in America, a huge college football game, and they're letting them have the pre-game set up on the par three course. They're letting them kind of start the college football game from Augusta National, from the grounds of Augusta National. So we are seeing some changes slowly here, and we may have to see it. If this forecast is right, and they're getting the tail end of a hurricane coming in the next 2 or 3 days, and we do get a deluge of rain, it'll be very interesting to see if they can resist not having placing.
Paul, I was watching the Colin Morikawa press conference. I don't know if you saw it there. It was on about an hour or so ago.
No, I didn't. And,
oh boy, is this kid confident. Whew. And he makes a very good point. He was asked a question about, because this is his first time round, does he feel that it will play against him? And he didn't quite say it would, but he made a point of saying, "Is like, look, you know, I know my lines. I've spent the last 3 days. I'm pretty sure of what my lines are. I'm not saying experience doesn't matter, but in that kind of attitude that all these young, accomplished sports people have of like, look, I control only that which I can control and leave everything else alone. He certainly gave the impression that he doesn't feel that he is handicapped as a first timer. Do you think his confidence is warranted?
Look, it's great to have confidence. He's a major champion now. He's only on the tour, what, 2 years now? This is into his end of his second year and beginning of his third. And, you know, confidence is a wonderful thing. But like I said just there a moment ago, 5 minutes ago, there's going to be a radical change. You can talk all you want about lines off the tees and lines on the greens and whatever you want, like he's done in his practice rounds. This golf course is going to radically change between now and Thursday when the tournament starts. So, you know, there's a reason why only Fuzzy Zeller as a rookie has won around here. It is a golf course you need to get to know well. I mean, one of the guys that I fancy for that reason is Dustin Johnson. I know he's the favourite, but not alone has he got unbelievable form coming in here, but he's a guy that's trending in terms of getting to know this golf course. First four times he played here, nowhere to be seen, no top tens, didn't play the golf course very well. But the last five times he's had top tens, you know, five in a row, including a second place last year. So, even a player of that caliber is getting to know takes a bit of getting to know the golf course. And I think Morikawa's going to have to go through that learning experience. He also hasn't shown a huge amount of form really since he's won that PGA. His whole world is turned upside down. Now that he's a major champion. And it's great to have that confidence, but there's also a lot of learning to go on around Augusta National, and particularly if the golf course lengthens out in terms of this heavy rain and it plays so long. You know, Morikawa, not being one of the longer hitters, is going to be disadvantaged. As great as an iron player as he is, and he's one of the best strokes gained approach players on the tour, but he's going to be massive disadvantage going into, you know, these greens with a 4 and 5 iron, where other guys are going to be hitting 9 iron.
Paul, this is Rory's sixth attempt at the career Grand Slam at Augusta, but probably the first time he's coming in somewhat under the radar. Certainly not the most talked about player coming into Augusta, because everybody's just obsessed with Bryson DeChambeau. And even at the moment, he's doing his press conference and he's saying, "I still haven't decided on the 48-inch driver. I was against it, but I tried it out yesterday. I'm coming around to it. I'll decide on the day whether I'm going to put it in the bag. And that'll be the focus now on Thursday." We've just been talking about DeChambeau and how this has become, this tournament, almost a referendum on the future of the golf ball and the future of golf and how it may need to change, on whether Bryson wins or whether Bryson loses. Are we all a little bit too obsessed with Bryson? Are people too focused on the distance and not enough on the other areas of his game that he's improved?
On the Bryson thing, absolutely. Personally, I think what he's done is just joined the party of big hitting in professional golf. I mean, I know Peter's gone on a lot about it. I've gone on a lot about it. Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, Gary Player, we've all gone on a lot about it for 10 years. And nobody's really listened or nobody's really paid that much attention. But all of a sudden, because Bryson has put on this massive amount of bulk, and Bryson all of a sudden is jumping out of his shoes. He's not very elegant when he hits the golf ball. It looks like he's putting every sinew into every shot. All of a sudden, that spotlight on big hitting, particularly because he's won the US Open and the brazen approach that he took to it, all of a sudden the spotlight now has gone on big hitting. But Nathan, this has been a part of the game for the last 10 years. Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, John Rahm, Dustin Johnson, they've been playing this game for the last 10 years. Bryson is not hitting the ball 40 yards past where they're hitting it. He's up with them now. He's joined the party, and maybe he's only slight ahead. But remember, he was seventh biggest hitter when he won the US Open. He wasn't. Matt Wolff hit it further than him. Rory McIlroy hit it further than him that week. He won that US Open, first of all, with a very aggressive strategy that nobody else wanted to take on, which is pretty much driver off every tee. And secondly, he won it with really good short game. That was really where he kind of got the strokes gained over the rest of the field. And, you know, the other thing about it, remember, I'm a great believer in horses for courses. And if you look at Wingfoot, and, you know, I played the US Open there, a lot of the golf courses, a lot of those holes, rather 17 of the 18 holes that went through them, you could bounce the ball in from the front of the green. There was no bunker, no water short of the green, and you could bounce the ball in from the front. And certainly Bryson did that a number of times. When he was out of position and in the rough, he was able to chase the ball in from the front of the green. And also a lot of the greens have sloped from back to front, so the camber was actually holding the ball into it as well too. And, you know, he played wonderfully well. That's not take anything away from what he achieved there. But that's not the case at Augusta National, where, you know, there's only one or two holes where you can actually bounce a ball in on the green. The rest of it are all covered at the front, whether it be by a bunker, whether it be by water, or whether it be the fact that the green is elevated up and the ball is shedded off. So, you know, if you do get it out of position around here, it's going to be a lot more difficult than it was for him at Wingfoot. But look, I'm not being critical of Bryson. I think he's just shining a spotlight on what the top players have been doing for the last 10 years. The massive correlation, it's so difficult to achieve in a modern game unless you hit the ball an absolute country mile. That's the bottom line there.
So, Paul, on McIlroy then, we can't not talk about him because he is, as Nathan said, look, going for the Grand Slam again. For people unaware of just what select company that is, we're talking Saracen, Hogan, Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, the end. So even if you're, you know, at a point with McIlroy where you think he's not going to win a glut of majors, even if he just wins the Masters and retires with five, that puts him in extraordinary company for a golfer from this country, you know, and we can kind of lose sight of that sometimes. Absolutely. So Faldo was talking about him, and Faldo has said this about McIlroy at Augusta for a few years now, and it ties in with your point about the importance of second shots. He said it's about consistently hitting the right number. That's one thing. I've watched in Rory over the years, even when he's warming up on the range, sometimes take his 8-iron, there's just too much disparity between the shots. And he talked about his own day. He said there's an old range at Augusta where there's a little green down the left-hand side, size of a dinner plate, and he would spend his time hitting 8 and 9 irons there back when Faldo was winning at Augusta. And he said McIlroy doesn't have that. And the stats bear that out. So he's fallen from maybe third strokes gained, give or take, with his iron shots to close to 60th. I guess one of the key questions among several others with Rory is, can he somehow get back to the guy who was third stroke gained in the last couple of weeks of practice?
Yeah, so all very good points there that I all agree with, Joe. And Faldo's absolutely right. You know, Bernard Langer said this to me 20-odd years ago. I remember having dinner with him talking. He was laughing. He was saying, everybody thinks Augusta winning around there is about putting. It's not. It's about distance control with your iron shots. And how right he's been proved, that statistics has now proven that absolutely clearly, that Langer was way ahead of his time and his instinct for the game was far ahead of his time. I think the fact that McIlroy has got a wet golf course this week will certainly play into his advantage. And I think certainly in terms of that disparity that he may have with his iron shots will be offset a little bit, because the ball will pretty much die when it hits the greens now because this rain is coming in. But look, he's not on form. We all know about McIlroy. We all know how great he is. We all know when he's got his A game, how good he is. But we haven't seen it, Joe. We haven't seen it since February, since before lockdown. And the irony is, before that, he was fabulous. He was right up there, as you say, third in strokes gained approach. He was driving a ball as good, if not better, than anybody. He's always been good with that aspect of the game. And his putting had really improved with the work that he was doing with Brad Faxon. But what we've seen post-lockdown is he's disengaged. He's disengaged mentally. And you know, there's a lot of excuses. There's a lot of reasons why he thinks he's not playing well. But you can just look at the bottom line of his statistics. You know, he's missing a lot more greens. He's missing more fairways. He's not putting as well. And everything has dropped off. And that's why we're seeing such a downscale, and why so many people are not really fancying him this week, particularly when you put on top of all of those things the pressure of, as you say, of trying to join such an elite group. And I agree with you. If he were to do this, this would move him away from everybody else in the current game. You know, remember, let's put it in perspective here. The last game to do, to last player to do this, to win the Grand Slam was Tiger Woods. Before that, it was Jack Nicklaus. And before that, I think it may well have been Gary Player. So we're talking about very, very sporadic times in the history of the game, and the great, great players. Many of them have not achieved, been able to do what he's in the threshold of doing. So that's why we're also hopeful that he does get it together. But the indications are not good this year. And, you know, if we were talking and having this conversation in the middle of April in a normal year, we would have been quite giddy about his chances. But, you know, the way things have gone over the last 6 or 7 months and how he's been playing, you know, it's hard to you know, build an argument that this is going to be Rory's year.
Yeah. And he's always such a fascinating character to try and read. But in so much as you can read into things, people may not have seen, like, he snapped his club. You don't just do that the first time you make a mistake. So he snapped his club a couple of weeks ago from 140 yards, missed the green. That suggested somebody who's acutely aware of the weakness and who has been working, or to some extent or they're trying to work to sort it out, and it's not happening. That was what I read into that snapping of a club.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, Joe. I'd agree. Absolutely. There's a frustration there, you know. I mean, he 29 birdies that week still. You know, more birdies than never had in a tournament before, but finished 17th in the event. You know, that's not good enough for a player of Rory's standard, you know, and he knows that. And you know, when you've 29 birdies, particularly the kind of player that you are. But remember, that was quite a tight golf course too. You know, yes, if you hit the ball straight, there's lots of birdie chances. But I've played there a number of times in Sherwood. And you know, if you get it offline, you can make mistakes. And his iron play was where he lost a lot of it. And the point that you made earlier, how much his strokes gained approach has dropped off down to near 60th compared to being third beforehand, is another indication. As I say, of a guy who's not quite on his game. Not quite. He's a long way off his game. And you know, also a guy who's probably battling the swing a little bit. We know he does battle a swing every now and again. And that's probably where he's at. So it would be unusual. You have to say, Rory, if you look at all his career, he normally trends before he wins. And he's building up over a lot of consistency. And then all of a sudden he wins. He never goes from playing absolute terrible into playing well. So that's why I really don't fancy his chances this week. Having said that, you could build a little bit of an argument to say, well, you know what, the course is going to be really soft and wet, and he always relishes those, and his four majors have been won on wet golf courses. And you can also build an argument to say, well, you know, the pressure that he suffered, by his own admittance, over the last four or five years and trying to be only the sixth player to win the Grand Slam, is going to be certainly lessened by the fact that there's not going to be the intensity of the crowds around. You can try to build all those arguments if you want. But I think the real nuts and bolts of it would be how he plays. You know, confidence comes from playing well. You just don't turn up and all of a sudden think, right, I'm going to have a great attitude here. It comes from, you know, the work you've done building into things, and you build your way into form. You build your way into a big performance. It just doesn't turn on like a light switch. You know, you have to kind of have a little bit of, a little bit of a body of work building in there. And remember going back to Tiger Woods last year, you know, he had some really nice form trending before he went on to win this Masters last year. He had won the FedEx at the end of the previous year. He had a couple of top 10s, you know, January, February, March last year, and a top 20 as well, as he went into going on to win the Masters. So, you know, confidence is really important for even the players of this standard. And you know, that's why, again, going back to Dustin Johnson, I think he's got all his ducks in a row. And if he can, as Peter says, avoid falling down the stairs this year, he's got a great chance.
Paul, can I ask you about Koepka for a second? Because here's a good stat. Of his 14 worldwide wins, he's finished in the top 10 in the tournament directly preceding the tournament he won 8 times. Now, obviously, we know that Koepka's been injured, so his year is not really much to talk of. But a couple of 65s in Houston, do you think that's enough to warrant a good look at Koepka?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is a warrant enough. You know, he's not a guy that plays a huge amount of golf well outside of major championships. You know, and he is a guy that can turn it on. Not everybody can, but I wouldn't certainly discount him. He played really well on this golf course, obviously getting to know it the way he's done over the years. You know, he finished second last year. He probably should have won. In fact, I think he'd 2 water balls and also a double bogey, if memory stands me right, last year. So he was really close. It eradicates those massive mistakes, and he wins the tournament comfortably last year. So he's obviously a guy comfortable on this golf course. He's figured out a way of playing it. He gets confident very quickly. And coming in off a good performance last week, and freshness as well too, the fact that he didn't have that big run of tournaments around the FedEx because he didn't qualify and was nursing an injury. I wouldn't discount him, and he will be the kind of guy, particularly in these softer conditions that we're expecting, that can play that front-footed golf, which I think it's going to be. I mean, I could be proved wrong here, but I think it's going to be quite a, you know, as the rain, you know, slowly as we get towards the weekend, it's going to be less and less rain. And I really do think that the players will take off the shackles, and we're going to see some really aggressive golf in there. And it's going to be great watching on TV.
A player, Paul, who sometimes maybe we don't talk about enough around these tournaments and who is right up there amongst the favourites, John Rahm, who seems to be able to win on any and every course, whatever the conditions, the tougher the better. He's won 2 big tournaments already this year. He has shown form around Augusta over the last couple of years. Are you looking at Rahm as somebody, when we're talking about the likes of Koepka, Dustin Johnson, that is in that top tier of contenders for this week?
Absolutely. Wow.
Just smashed the place up. I was so excited about John Rahm.
No, I do, Nathan. I'm big on John Rahm. To be honest, if you ask me who's going to be the most dominant player in the game in the next 5 years, and I have to take a guess, I would say John Rahm. I just think that he's early in the stage of acceleration through his career. He's full of ambition. He's full of rawness. He's not distracted with stuff going on in terms of life getting in the way with business decisions and family life and all that others may have. He's young. He's energetic. He's coming through. He's on the way up. And I think there's a lot to achieve for John Rahm. The only word of warning, even though I think he played okay there last year with just about a top 10, the only word of warning I'd have about John Rahm, as great a player as he is, his weakest statistic, if you want to look at it, and I've looked at all the player statistics where their strong and weakness is, and particularly when it comes to form, his actual weakness statistic is strokes gained approach, which is the most important one around Augusta National. So if you're looking for a reason why he might not perform or hasn't performed in the past around here, it's probably his arm play. So if that is on, we know the rest of it's all in place. And he's got a heart of a lion on top of everything else. So absolutely, you know, be a brave man to bet against this guy not winning a major championship in the next 12 months. And who's to say it can't start now? He's that good of a player. He ticks every single box for me.
Well, it's fascinating to hear you talk about. Sorry, Peter, jump in. And by all means, if you want to call Paul out on any nonsense he's been talking, please do that. We'd all love to see that.
No. I do that privately. what I would say, and this is my tuppenny's worth or curveball that I throw in here, right? With the Masters changing this year, so no patrons, no galleries, 2T star, soft golf course. It's everything points to me that there's going to be a first time winner this year. And I know Fuzzy Zeller, how many years ago, 19, 20 years ago now, that we've had a first time winner.
It was 2000, 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's 40 years
ago. 40 years ago.
40 years ago. Yeah. Right. So I firmly, you know, if you want me to look at it from the outside looking in, I actually think we're going to have a first time winner this year.
Anyone some catching your eyes? What
do you think of that, Paul?
Yeah, I mean the obvious ones are Rahm and Schauffele. Schauffele and Rahm are the two that you jump on if it's going to be a first-time winner. I mean, the two majors we play behind closed doors, we've had Morikawa win, first-time winner. We've had Bryson win, first-time winner. You know, Morikawa was very quick to acknowledge after he won that the fact that there was no crowd certainly helped him with the intensity of trying to win his first major championship. So, you know, I think it's a pretty good call, particularly when you're looking at the kind of quality of players like a Rahm and Schauffele in particular, and maybe even throw a Tyrrell Hatton in there. They're the kind of guys that are well capable and have got the form and have got the games to take on and win a Masters. Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't rule that out at all. It's not hard.
Do you have someone in mind, Peter? Do you have a first timer in mind?
No, I kind of looked at it and, you know, our listeners are, you know, they like to have a little bit of a gamble. And what I would suggest is if there is a bet out there for a first time winner, you don't actually have to pick a player. You can just go like a first time winner.
But Peter, do you mean first time as in first major win or first time at Augusta winner? Because then you're talking about like Matt Wolf, Morikawa, Sung Jae Im, people who've never played it before.
I honestly think, and I no doubt would be proved wrong, but certainly I think there's going to be a first time winner, as in the first person who's ever gone to Augusta is going to break Fuzzy Zeller's record this year. Purely so many different things that are going to happen.
Yeah, I misunderstood your question there. Yeah, the one guy for me out of that list you stand out there is Wolf. I mean, for me, Wolf's got the X factor. He performed really well in the US Open. He didn't fold on the Sunday. He was right there. He pushed him. I know Bryson went off into the sunset. But I was really impressed with him. And talking to all the guys in TaylorMade behind the scenes, you know, this guy has got the X factor. He hits it a million miles. He's brave. He's got a really good short game. He's full of ambition. He certainly would be the guy that for me is outstanding. And Hatton, I know Hatton has played here before, but, you know, keep an eye on him too if we're looking for a European winner.
Paul, can I ask you, you mentioned it about, or Peter mentioned it about the fact that there's going to be no fans, no patrons. Steve Williams was talking recently that the lack of fans kind of handicaps the likes of Tiger Woods more than does other players because, you know, he's experienced at leveraging the uncontrollable nature of it all against less experienced players. But like, And I appreciate that it's a hard thing to quantify, but like surely not having 30,000 people watching you try to draw a 7-iron off like pine straw onto a domed green, like that pressure, that back nine pressure they talk about at Augusta, will it be lessened by not having all these people there?
I think so, absolutely. As I say, Morikawa was first to acknowledge it, and I do, absolutely. Of course it's going to be easier, you know, without the roars. If Tiger is in the hunt, for example, and you're going up head-to-head against roar, you telling me that everybody in the field last year was not affected with the roars of Tiger when he was doing hitting shots in the back nine and stuff that was going on? Absolutely. Of course they were intimidated. They all made mistakes in Tiger's presence, and a lot of that down was to the fact that everybody was there was pulling for Tiger in the crowd. And Tiger knows how to play it too, you know. It's about, you know, last onto the green when you're walking onto it, you know. It's about, you know, finishing out so the crowd start to move. You know, there's all those little things that go on behind the scenes that an experienced player knows how to play in terms of the crowd. So it's certainly, I'd agree with what William said there, absolutely, that, you know, it, if anybody is going to hurt, it's going to be Tiger. But again, I'm not seeing Tiger being in the running this year. I wouldn't disagree. It certainly could help a guy who hasn't won a major championship before, or even, as Peter says, a possibility of a guy coming through playing his first ever Masters going on to win. Certainly the fact that there's no crowds there can only help that rather than hinder it.
Paul, this is all very interesting and great statistics and great analysis. But I know you're at heart
a huge butt coming here.
You're just a dreamer. You're not like Peter Lawrie, you know, you're not a pragmatist, you're just a dreamer. And you want Jordan Spieth to be right there coming down the back nine on Sunday. Give us a little bit of something. Give us a little bit of hope. Is there any?
No, I'm afraid I'm with Peter on that one at the moment. Oh, Jordan is miles away from where he needs to be. I mean, look at his performances. He's not even raising a gallop, getting close. I mean, he's a great guy. Sad. I heard him interview it again last night, and you know, we all want to see him coming back. But you know, he's lost at the moment, and paralysis by analysis comes to mind. The guy who's tried to figure out the game from a technical point of view, maybe not as gifted as the other players are in a technical point of view, and he tried to up that part. He tried to improve his weaknesses so much that it's hard to find back. Bob Torrance used to have a saying, you know, about improving your strengths. You know, if you spend so much time trying to improve your weaknesses, you lose your strength, and it's very hard to go back. He said, if you're a little bit, if you're not very normal in how you swing the club, and you try to swing the club normal, it's very hard to find your way back to where you were. You know, and he did have a bit of funkiness in his swing. You know, Sandy Lyle being the prime example as well, when he tried to, you know, standardize his swing. And I think that's where Jordan has got lost, and it's a real shame. But yeah, again, like Tiger, you'd have a sentimental bet, but that's all it would be. You can't really put an argument in favor of him coming through.
Yeah, I tuned into Houston at one stage, and he was +5 hitting a drive, and he was re-gripping the club almost like Sergio, you know, just not in a good place. You mentioned there earlier, and it just caught my ear, where you talked about the rye grass and how the ball sits up really nicely on the fairway at Augusta. So, you know, instantly everybody listening felt a certain resentment towards you, because that's not an experience we're going to have. But you might give us, because we hear all the time about the beautiful subtleties of Augusta, the things which make it so great. And for sure, we can see some of those things from TV, be it if you're, you know, hitting your third in on that steep incline on 13, or, you know, on numerous occasions, the ball is above your feet with that kind of draw lie and the shot is calling for a high fade. There are all of these little intricacies which make us love the game, you know, and people who don't love golf look at it and say, well, like, you know, just your guy hits the ball, it lands on the green, I mean, that's kind of it. Whereas there's, you know, an infinite number of options, especially around a place like Augusta. You might give us a sense of that at Augusta in particular, having been there.
Yeah, and I played it last year as well too, so I'm up to date with everything Augusta like. First and foremost, this might sound silly for a guy who's 53 years of age now and doesn't play a whole lot anymore, but it's not a very difficult golf course. And let me just explain that. I played the Monday after the tournament last year. I played the very back tees. It was quite windy. My game is nowhere near the standard it needs to be, certainly for a quality player at the top of the game in the moment. I had 5 birdies. Okay, I had 5 bogeys and I shot 72. And, you know, I've always felt this about Augusta. If you're on your game, it's not a particularly really difficult golf course. Now, if you're not quite on your game, you make some mistakes, you can quickly get into trouble around there. But the targets are generous, the fairways are generous, and also the greens are, you know, are generous as well too. This is a golf course you can get at, and it gives you lots of chances, particularly on the par fives. Even me now, not particularly long anymore, but still, you know, 13 is not a long par five for me. You know, I'm still getting home with a drive and a three rescue, like I did last year. And you know, so it's a playable golf course. But don't get me wrong, it's not a piece of cake. You know, you know, tournament conditions is a different thing. You know, your heart rate's a different place and all of those things. But you can certainly play around this golf course. It's not, it's the history of it makes it more intimidating than the actual golf shots. Because, you know, we've all watched over the years guys make a mess of certain shots. And, you know, he's standing on the 15th fairway and, you know, you remember Seve's shot when he pull-hooked it into the water and, you know, Curtis Strange taking 10, I think, on the 13th hole and all of those things. That goes through all players' minds. You know, that's what Augusta is. You know, as you come in at street level, everything is below you. So you start on the first hole and the golf course goes all the way down to Race Creek and then comes all the way back up again. It's quite wide, as I say, particularly with no people there this week. You're going to see a lot of green area, a lot of grass area. And it's fun. That's what I love about it. Baltrae is a little bit like this in Safari. So I go up to Baltrae and I feel if I play well, I can really shoot a good score around there. Whereas I go to Wingfoot and I can play great in Wingfoot and the best I'm going to shoot is 71. And that's not as much fun as a golf course where you feel you can get a little bit out of it. And Augusta is that. It's a little bit got that Baltrae mentality about it where you feel you can get at it and it can give you something back. It doesn't absolutely burst your balls from the first hole to the last, like, say, a Wingfoot or a Shinnecock would.
Mm. Yeah, sounds amazing.
What do you make of, just you were talking about 13, I think Bryson said that his plan is to hit it through 13 onto the 14th fairway and then give himself like a gap wedge in.
Yeah, if he can do that, and bearing in mind, you know, with the heavy conditions that are going to come in, that's a huge carry to get it all the way up there because it's an uphill tee shot as well. But if he does do that, if you remember, Fionn, if you think back to previous years, sometimes players, if they have to lay up, they lay up way, way, way right with their second shot to give themselves an angle, particularly when the pin's on the left-hand side of the green on 13. So that's kind of what he's talking about. If the pin is on the pin is on the left-hand side, hitting it up that right-hand side is a really good play. And if he's long enough to get it up there, you know, we've never seen anybody hit it up there with a tee shot before. But if he's long enough to get it up there, good luck to him. And he's only going to have an 8-iron in. It'll be slightly downhill second shot from there. And he'll have the whole green to work with. And he'll have quite a lot of width to work with as well. So it could well be a good play. And remember, let's not diminish this guy in any way. This guy's a lot smarter than he makes himself out to be. You know, he studies everything. His strategy was absolutely proved right. Everybody laughed at him at the US Open. And his strategy was absolutely proved right. You can bet your bottom dollar, if that US Open was played again the week after in Wingfoot, everybody, all the top players certainly would have adopted a strategy that he did. And he was the only lone ranger who went out and said, no, this is what I'm going to do. You know, most of the other players were putting two irons in the bag and talking about working the ball and getting it in play and playing from the fairways. But I think he's a pioneer in that regard. And you're going to see a lot of the players follow the strategies that he employs because he's been proven right.
I mentioned he was in his press conference earlier today. He said he drastically cut the corner on 13. Drastically cut the corner and left himself a pitching wedge into 13.
Yeah, absolutely, Nathan. And, you know, we've seen Bubba do that in the past. So that's not unusual. That's not surprising. We've seen that. I think Tiger hit wedge in there too in 97 when he won. I'm not really surprised. As I say, it's not a long hole. If I'm able to hit 3-iron in there, you know, what are those guys able to do? That really doesn't surprise me. That's just a modern game. I mean, it really is incredible how far these guys can hit the ball. I mean, you can carry that bunker on the first hole. I mean, that's an incredible 320 carry, I think it is, on the right-hand side to carry that bunker. I mean, that's an easy hole. If that bunker's not in play for you and it's only a driver wedge, that fairway all of a sudden now is 50 yards wide rather than just 30.
It's interesting what you say there when I mentioned what DeChambeau has just said. You said, well, Bubba did that. Tiger was doing that 20 years ago. Yet there's something about when DeChambeau talks that it always sounds incredibly impressive. Do you think that is that having an effect on the players he's going up against? Are they seeing through this and going, all right, he's got brand Bryson is very much on point right now and the rest of the world is buying into it. But within the game, are they looking at Bryson and going, you're not doing that in pretty radically different to what we're doing?
They're looking at it. And as I said earlier, he's shining a spotlight on the importance of big hitting. And he's been proven right. You know, golfers are like sheep. I mean, I heard Peter say this a few weeks ago in the podcast. He's right. Golfers follow. When you see somebody doing something in a direction, we all seem to follow it. That's what we do. It's kind of inbred in us. Somebody has a bit of success, whether it be something they do in the gym or a new diet that they're on, or whether it's a new equipment or a new driver or a new ball. We all want to try to get that and get that edge. And I think that's why I refer to him as a pioneer. He's like the Pied Piper. And because he's been proven successful with it, and they are following in general, and you're going to see very aggressive play this week. As I say, following on from the US Open win and how he won it and the brazen approach that he took, and bearing in mind the conditions are going to lend themselves. If the rain stops, and, you know, the forecast is it's going to be the rain's going to be so heavy, it'll be thunder and such torrential that they'll have to stop play. So if they do get out and don't have to play in the rain, and it's just warm and humid where the ball will fly and the course is soft, bet your bottom dollar you're going to see some very aggressive lines be taken by a lot of players off the tees, not just Bryson, because that's the way the game has gone. That's the spotlight that's been shone on the importance of it. The strokes gained approach that Mark Brody has brought to the table is becoming more important now than it's ever. It's always been looked at before, but now it's really at the point of player strategy, and they're looking at it even more and more, particularly that correlation between big hitting and success, and Bryson proving it. As I say, it's only, this is what Rory's been doing. This is why Rory is so brilliant, is, and has been so brilliant in his career. Is I mean, it's like, you know, the best way I can describe it would be, I tell this story, I might have told it on here before, sorry if I'm repeating myself, but a couple of years ago, I played here in Sunningdale, and I always played the back tees, always, every single time, middle of winter, no problem, always played the back tees. Not a particularly golf course, long golf course, maybe 70, 100 yards. And last winter, I was playing in the middle of winter, and I played the first hole, driving a 5-wood, front of the green, two-putted for a birdie, happy, going to the second tee. And the three guys I'm playing with said, look, Paul, this golf course is too long for us off the Blues. We're not going to play the Blues today. We're going to play the Whites from here on in. And I said, you know what? I've never played the Whites before. I'll play the Whites. Now, the Whites were 25 yards forward of where the Blues were, generally in all the par fours and par fives. Well, to be quite honest, the golf course was so easy for me. It was a joke. It really was so easy. I shot 65. I gave myself 7.5 out of 10 in terms of how I played. I played good, but not brilliantly. But there was no fairway bunker in play. All the par fives were 5 irons. All the par fours were wedges. The par threes were 2 clubs less. And it was like, oh my God, this golf, I couldn't believe the difference in the tees. And that's only 25 yards. If I'm playing with Bryson, he's another 40 yards ahead of me. So the equivalent of me playing off the Whites would be if I went and played, took the ladies' tees, the red tees in Sunningdale, and moved 25 yards forward at those and then started from there. That's the advantage that the big hitting has got. And, you know, I think all of us can relate to how easy a golf course would play if we had a 50-yard advantage on every single tee shot that we play. That's the importance, in essence, of what big hitting is to the game. And that's what those guys are doing.
Yeah. Well, listen, we've taken up loads of your time. Tom Hunter says Paul is just fascinating to listen to on YouTube. And Graham has said, I've got a drinking game going, lads. Every time I hear Bryson's a scientist, it's a gulp of beer. Lockdown has been boring. Don't let me down, Paul, he says. So,
well, I think it's going to be great, Joe. I really do. I think it's a great platform for the game. Great platform for Britain and Ireland. Everybody's on lockdown at the moment. Everybody's stuck to their rooms. There's no Premiership football on this week. I know we're probably going to have record figures watching it on Sky this week. You know, that's what we're expecting with no soccer on and, you know, everybody being on lockdown. So I think it's an opportunity for the game to showcase itself. And, you know, I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with this aggressive golf that probably likelihood to be played. And remember, just I'll finish on a final point. Augusta, the best player generally wins around Augusta. You know, it's very rare that you see a guy who's 25th in greens and reg and has putted his way to winning the thing. That really doesn't happen around Augusta. You're going to see, generally, the great thing about Augusta is the guy who plays the best from tee to green generally is the guy who ends up being the champion. So it's a very fair golf course in that regard.
And on that note then, forgetting about the odds and value for money, all things being equal, if you had to pick one?
Oh, I'm going with DJ. You know, I know he's the favourite, but I just think the form and the fact that he's trending so much, we're getting to know this golf course, he'd be the one. But obviously my heart would be with Rory and completing that Grand Slam and moving himself away from everybody else. But unfortunately, as you know, I can't build an argument to think that he's really going to raise a gallop this week. And I think it's going to be DJ. I think Justin Thomas will be another guy. You know, I'd go with the favourites, John Rahm, another guy. I'd go with the really best players. I'm expecting one of the real thoroughbreds to come through here and win.
Okay, very good. Well, listen, we'll be watching on Sky like Manny, no doubt. We're going to let you drop out here. We're going to continue on for 5 minutes to wrap things up. But Paul McGinley, pleasure. Thanks so much for making time.
See you, Paul.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Paul McGinley there. Brilliant to listen to. Peter Lowry. Why can't you be more like Paul? I'm joking.
I knew that was coming.
Gee, thanks, Joe. You're just so nice.
Who's your winner, by the way, then, all things being equal?
Okay.
Holy Fino.
Oh, here he's unfolding a piece of paper.
No. I sat down last night. Kids were doing their homework. And I said to myself, right, I'm not going to watch the telly. I'm actually going to sit down and actually study the form and stuff like that.
Let's all sit back and enjoy this.
I have. So if anybody wants to have a gamble, right, this is my top 20 picks, right?
Jesus.
So do we want to go top 20 or do we want to go top 10 or do we just want
to
win?
Oh, okay. So no, that's okay. I thought you were about to say you were going to give me 20 names. Okay. So this is to finish in the top 20. Yeah. Shoot.
Yes. So we're going to go, the people who stand out to me, right, are Justin Rose for a top 20 pick. Right?
He's about 55-1, isn't he?
Yeah. So I'm giving people some value. You know, I like Tony Fenu, but I believe him for a top 10. I believe Bubba Watson for a top 10. And the person I'm going to put some money on this week is two players, Matthew Wolfe, and my outsider is Jason. I struggle with a surname.
Kokrak.
What is it?
Kokrak.
Kokrak. Yeah. So there's my two. And then we can go, I know others would say, you know what I mean, you're probably going to tell me that Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantley are well up there, but I just fancy a first time winner of the Masters this week.
Well, it'll be an amazing call if you're right. So Kokrak, maybe just give us a sense of why you've picked him. He seems a touch random.
First Masters, hits the ball a long way, has been trending quite well lately.
Won a couple of weeks ago.
I just like the way he plays, to be honest with you. Yeah. Form is good since lockdown, or since coming out of lockdown. Mm. And the Masters, as I said to you, it's good, like two, which has never happened at Augusta. I think they'll go placing preferred lies because they won't want balls and balls place. Greens are going to be somewhat similar. Of course, it's going to be wet. It smacks to me that it's going to be a tournament not like the Masters. So it's going to be somebody coming along. You won't have the same pressure that there is normally at a Masters. You know, you're not going to see that tunnel up the 18th trying to hit your tee shot up the fairway. You're actually going to see bunker, you're going to see fairway, you're not just going to see people. Going into 16, the same thing. 15, the same thing. I just that's the way I'm looking at it anyway.
Yeah, that's all fair enough. Jonathan Kennedy says, I hope none of those players heard this. They'll all be home Saturday with Peter's normal predictions, which is a touch harsh. Oof. I would say a touch
very
unfair.
Harsh, John.
A touch
unfair. Very harsh.
It's like winning the
very
par
harsh.
Three.
Also very wrong. Peter gets his fair share. Jesus. Of his best
I
right.
I've had a good go.
I don't really know where that's coming from.
So which caddies have you tapped up for those tips this week? Who?
Ew.
I haven't talked to any caddies.
The same caddy who told him that Rory's was having a baby.
Because I feel like the place lies as insider info. And the way Paul said, Peter, that's a very good question. I just thought, they've both been talking. It's obviously just been said around the course of the caddies.
I didn't even know McGinley was coming on.
Some sort of is there a WhatsApp group that you've still managed to remain in where all these juicy secrets are?
No.
Nathan, who are you picking?
I give you a good story, actually.
Bo told you that, didn't he, about the preferred lies?
Hang on, Laurie's just said he's got a good story for us. The lawyers are listening. Go.
No. It was probably 2015 or something like that. I was wasn't playing particularly well. So I thought I'd hack the caddies WhatsApp group and get in and find out what they were all talking about. So I came up with this brilliant idea that I text somebody who didn't have my number and say I was another caddy and I wanted to get in. So I got in, but not realizing that all the other caddies would have my number and my name would come up as somebody else. So I got in for a while, but then I was slowly but surely kicked out.
What did you find?
It was a bit of crack while I was
there. Why did you want to go in?
Why? Oh, because I'm an inquisitive person. Actually, I'm very inquisitive.
That makes you sound more paranoid than inquisitive.
I wanted to know. No, it's got nothing to do with me. I just wanted to know what was going on because they'd have great information flying around the caddy's WhatsApp.
What's the link with you not playing well? Because you said I wasn't playing well, so I wanted to get into the caddies group.
So, I was bored. Uh-huh. I wasn't playing well. I was probably having most weekends off.
Okay.
So I was bored from not playing.
You wanted the gossip.
There you go.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested in what Peter says about could it be just a totally different Masters? I know everything is going to be built to make it look as close to April and what it normally is. But maybe, as you say, that shot selection, the views that everybody's so used to, maybe that's not there. The weather been quite wet, maybe that makes it slightly different. It's very hard to pick a winner if you're going down that route because this is the one tournament where actually you can write off, I think, a good chunk of the field straight away. You know, maybe you do get a first time debutante at Augusta, but it's highly unlikely, so you can rule out probably 20 guys there. I like John Rahm. As I said last week, I think you can overthink this. He can win on any course. He has some form around Augusta already. I really like him. I really like Bubba. I'll definitely have a bet on Bubba. He's been playing well over the last few weeks. It is strange. I was looking there, like the US Open, the build-up to that was insane in the quality of the golf, the quality of the winners. Not much has happened since then. You sort of, Patrick Cantlay is the only A-lister who's won since the US Open. And Tyrrell Hatton, who won at Wentworth on the other side. So there's not this long list of names. I know that players like Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka played well last week without winning. So, yeah, I think Bubba and Rahm. And then, as I said last week, I thought he was going to win last week. Jason Day.
Mm. He's 33-1, I was looking, Day, which isn't terrible value.
Fiona, well, anyone jump your, this.
I think Brooks, that's the guy for me.
Yeah.
Only because DJ and Bryson, they're just not good odds. Like, but Brooks is quality, like, you know, proven winner, particularly under the pressure of a major. That stat that he, in 8 of his previous 14 wins, he finished in the top 10 in the tournament before, shows that he knows how to build up to. And he does, like, that's what he does. He doesn't seem to care as much about regular events. And, I mean, obviously, it's the injuries. You know, he says he's completely injury-free, but, you know, who knows? Mm. But, yeah, I think, and he has proven to play well around Augusta. Yeah, he's the one. And I, Nathan, you mentioned Bubba as well. Maybe it's slightly, I don't know what odds Bubba is, but 2-time winner who's finally starting to play well again and... Yeah, I think he's a good, I was going to say outside bet, but he's a good.
Yeah, he's 22-1. Okay, 22-1, which is reasonable.
Yeah, it's a reasonable.
I find myself totally in the same boat as Nathan because post-US Open, I can't really think of a tournament, you know? Pre-US Open, all the big guns, we were seeing lots of them. They were moving around. You had a real feel for them. There were a couple of names just jumping out at me as very likely. It just feels like they're all coming in here a little cold. So... Bubba's in my mind. I think partly that's down to the interview he did. And I know he's had a couple of top tens, but this sense he's feeling good about himself and obviously a past winner. So I was going to mention Bubba.
Very few players have won the Masters 3 times, though.
Sure. True. No, I hear you.
Left-handers, though. It's funny while you're thinking of your other, like, we have barely mentioned Tiger. And, like, Paul,
what can you say?
When he's finishing, saying, you know, in his heart, he would love Rory to do it. And you do have to remind yourself when you're going through that list of names that if Rory comes away on Sunday, what it does for Irish sport and conversations around Irish sport, we won't get into greatest and all of that, but it changes all those conversations.
It does.
It puts him at a level above every other European golfer. I know he would have won the most majors of European golfers, but I think it'll put him above Faldo. It'll put him above Seve. Mm-hmm. And an awful lot of what's happened over the last 5-6 years will be quickly forgotten. I think, let's be honest, we're probably all a little bit fed up and frustrated with talking about Rory and what could happen and what should happen. But it would still be something very, very special. Second to somehow Tiger winning it again. Mm. Next best storyline is McIlroy going and completing the career Grand Slam.
Will Tiger make the cut?
Really mentioned. The cut has changed this year. Have you seen that?
Oh, it's only, yeah, that's right. The first, but it's going to be not this year. Span. Yeah, but from here on in, it's 50 players. The top 50 go on to the weekend. So because Augusta put out the tweet yesterday, I think it was, and it was like starting with the 2020 Augusta National. So the implication is it's from here on in, it's not just for this year. So the 10-shot rule is gone.
Hmm. I'd be just plucking a name. I don't feel strongly. I genuinely don't. Some years you do, some years you don't. I don't. Justin Thomas is a phenomenal iron player. That jumps to mind. He hasn't been able to put on those greens. So maybe the extra bit of rain, and he's won this year, and maybe he finds those greens a touch easier. You know, I think of Adam Scott winning in 13, and there was some rain that year as well. Certainly on the Sunday, it was wet. Maybe it slowed them down a touch. And maybe it didn't, because I don't know what we're running out in the stimp meter, and they have the sub-air system. But I'm almost throwing Thomas out there just because of the iron game and because we haven't mentioned him as much as anything.
And he'll never let you down. He's almost there.
He's a ferociously good player, though.
he'll probably hang in there. He'll be around at the weekend. I mean, you just feel if Koepka could kind of be a part of the US Open conversation for a time, badly injured, you've got to think the guy who was second last year, give or take, is going to hang around again. Cantlay, I don't have enough of a feel for. Xander, I don't have enough of a feel for. McIlroy. Look, the way Rory wins, it's one of two ways. He gets off to a lightning start and he's just loves being a front runner. Or he reverses in very nicely on a weird kind of Sunday where, you know, he starts kind of 12th and puts in a stellar 63, 64. I don't like Rory's odds if he's hanging around under pressure around, you know, one or two within the lead. So, I don't know. It's wide open. It's wide open. None of us have tipped Bryson, interestingly. And no. I do think he's got a huge chance.
Of course he does.
Huge chance. Think how confident and good he's going to feel with gap wedge in his hand into all of these holes. He's going to feel 10 feet tall.
My friend, the golf pro, Seamus McMonagall, he texted me during the week and I asked him what he thought. And he goes, he could win by 10 shots.
Like, yeah. Could be a route.
Like, he has that in him.
We have got to go on that note. I mean, this is lovely, isn't it? So I'm more excited now about the Masters than I was at the start of this podcast. I say. I'm into it. Peter Lawry, wonderful stuff. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
If you're on Davenport, enjoy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Well, are we not putting in mind the possibility of doing
Let's not overcommit.
Yeah, let's underpromise and overdeliver.
Yeah.
Nice. That's why you and Nathan win multiple sports presenter of the year awards.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Keep an eye out if Jordan Spieth is within the top five Saturday or Sunday, we will definitely do an emergency pod, and we'll probably apply that to Rory as well. Beyond that, we make no promises. Nathan Murphy, thank you as well.
And if the first timer is winning, we're definitely doing a pod.
Yeah, Thursday's fine. We'll talk next Thursday. I've given you a hard time tonight. I don't even know why. Yeah, sorry. We love you. So that's us done. You can watch on Now TV. As ever, our partners here in Golf Weekly will talk to you next week, or maybe, if we're lucky, before then.
OTB Sports Golf Weekly with Now TV. Stream the Masters live on Now TV.